A time when you've lost a loved one, it's difficult to find any joy. Life seems to have no meaning while going through the grieving process. Introducing the funeral kazoo. You just can't help to shake those blues when you hear your favorite hymns being played by a kazoo. The funeral march. Amazing Grace. And even Oh Danny Boy. Now, don't that sound so much more cheery than those old bagpipes? The funeral kazoo. Let's put the fun back in funeral.
Due to the extreme nature of this program, listener discretion is advised. The subject matters may include topics of substance usage, sex, historical events that may be sensitive to some listeners, and foul language. Things discussed may not be considered politically correct in this overly sensitive environment. They may not be appropriate for listeners under the age of 13. As well as some listeners may find things offensive no matter the age, again, listener discretion is advised.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to the next episode of GXO, Generation Extraordinary, the podcast nobody asked for, focusing on everything that's relevant to the greatest generation alive today, Generation X. So if it involves movies, music, TV, and a bit of history from 1960 through 1999, we're going to talk about it. Who knows? You might just learn something before it's all said and done. And if you're lucky, this grouchy old fart might just regale you with a story or two. I'm Robert Pop, coming to you from beautiful Podunk, Nebraska.
Did you come home from work only to find that the locks had been changed and there was a note taped on the mailbox that said, "Goodbye, Turkey. My attorney will be in touch." And when you tried to get a hotel room, your card is declined because your soon-to-be ex has cleaned out the bank? Well, here's a temporary solution to your immediate housing issue. It's the Divorce Poncho, starting at only $2.99 at most convenience stores. It's the most affordable temporary shelter that's out there. It's thicker and more stylish than any trash bag on the market. The Divorce Poncho for the end of the honeymoon.
The views and opinions expressed are just that, Rob's views and opinions. He is not always politically correct, and they may not match up with your own opinions. It is not his intentions to offend anyone. Hopefully you find the shows entertaining and informative as well. Please note, Rob is not a professional historian, but he has done a lot of research for this show. With that being said, mistakes happen, but he will do his best to minimize those. Keep in mind, Rob is just some nut with a microphone.
Are you tired of the same old food being served in those sports bars? Burgers, nachos, popcorn, so on and so forth. And usually it's outrageously priced. At Frankenstein's, we have found a way to not only offer good food and beer, but at a good price. Here's how we do it. We limit the menu to only two items, hot dogs and beer. Hence the name, Frankenstein. We serve only the best, barely food-grade hot dogs and cut our costs even more by going right down to the slaughterhouse and picking up that product ourselves, essentially cutting out the middleman. No more costly FDA inspections, and shipping costs are almost nothing. And we brew our beer right out behind the bar. Why, you can smell it for miles. Frankenstein's, serving beer and wieners since last October.
Welcome to this week's episode of GXO, Generation Extraordinary, the podcast nobody asked for. This week, going to be talking about a few different things. I'm going to start with some of the most classic monsters that are a part of our history, the universal monsters. After that, then we're going to talk about some cryptoids. Ooh, that sounds interesting. The Universal, and what I mean when I say that, it's a series of horror films primarily produced by Universal Pictures from the 1930s through the 1950s. Early films like Dracula, starring Bela Lugosi, 1931 was created as a standalone film based on known novels. And the success to that film led to further adaptations such as Mary Shelley's Frankenstein in 1931. The film was made with plans to have its characters potentially reappearing in sequels for Universal. The studio would create further horror film characters such as the Wolfman in the 1940s and 1950s with Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman in 1943, or The House of Frankenstein in 1944, and the piece of shit Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein in 1948, which united several characters together. In my opinion, all of that shit just sucked donkey dicks. Oh my God, and I'm not a big fan of Abbott and Costello. These guys made a fucking career off of one popular deal. If you listen to their comedy, whether it be on radio or in movies or TV or whatever, it's basically who's on first all over again. That's all the fuck it is. They had no range. No range whatsoever. House of Frankenstein, you know, yeah, it didn't do much for me. Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. Following screenings of the films on television in the 1950s, several household products and toys were made based on the likeness of the Universal characters starting the appearances in the 1960s. Fast forward to the 1990s, it became priority for Universal to promote their back catalog with packaging that presented the films as a series. This led to releasing VHS home video editions in their older horror film between 1991 and 1995 as a, quote, themed line. The theme was then under the banner of the classic monster. So by releasing these, it gave way for some of the new films of the time that were on their singular monster, such as Stephen Sommers' The Mummy in 1999, and others featuring various Universal monster characters, such as Van Helsing, by the way, My Little Man Crush, Hugh Jackman. You know what, say what you will about me, but you know what? Tell me who don't like Hugh Jackman. I mean, you know, if you don't, you're a fucking communist. That's all there is to it. You're a fucking communist at that point. That released in 2004. Steve Jones of USA Today described Universal's most famous monsters as, quote, pop culture icons, specifically Dracula, or as Bela Lugosi said, I am Dracula. Yeah, so he doesn't say Dracula, it says Dracula. Frankenstein, which should actually be Frankenstein's monster, because here's the thing. Victor Frankenstein was the mad scientist, and the monster was his creation, but he wasn't named Frankenstein. Okay, keep that in mind. You know, so whenever somebody says, oh, I'm going to be Frankenstein for Halloween, you know what? Are you going as Victor Frankenstein or Frankenstein's monster? Fucking make up your mind. The Mummy, by the way, in the original movies, that was also Boris Karloff, and The Wolfman, Lon Chaney Jr. Universal's early horror films were adaptations of work from familiar authors and texts to give their films a prestige appeal. As I mentioned, these included Dracula, starring Bela Lugosi in 1931, whose success led to the production of other works such as Frankenstein, starring Boris Karloff as Frankenstein's monster. Yeah, that was also in 1931. Frankenstein's ending was changed by the studio head, who wanted Universal to be able to deploy key characters from the film into subsequent Universal productions. So even back in 1931, these fuckers up there at Universal go, oh, you know what, let's change the actual ending so that way we can bring it back for a fucking sequel. Fucking sequels. Some of that just doesn't work. Following the release of other Universal films, such as The Mummy, which also starred Boris Karloff in 1932, The Bride of Frankenstein, which starred Boris Karloff and Elsa Lanchester, that was in 1935, there was a dry spell of horror films. Universal only returned to the style following a successful theatrical release of Dracula and Frankenstein, which led to new works of Son of Frankenstein, starring Basil Rathbone, Son of Henry Frankenstein in Boris Karloff as the monster, and Bela Lugosi. No, he did not come back as Dracula. He came back as Igor in 1939. If you don't know a lot about Bela Lugosi, that was a tragic story about him. He went from being Dracula to basically being a fucking janitor there at Universal. Universal Studios would only introduce a few new monsters in the 1940s, with the most famous being Lon Chaney Jr.'s The Wolfman. The decade had Universal's horror output include many remakes and sequels, which films often directly reused old sets, footage, and narratives to replicate moments in their earlier horror productions. Universal's first transmedia production were from the 1940s and 1950s, with the films Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, where it starred Lon Chaney Jr. as Larry Talbot, or the Wolfman, and this is where it was fucked up, Bela Lugosi as Frankenstein's monster. Yeah, see? And that just didn't fucking work, because Lugosi had a whole different look than Karloff did. The House of Frankenstein starred Boris Karloff and Lon Chaney Jr. in 1944, both releasing during the U.S. involvement in World War II. And then, of course, you've got the piece of shit Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. This film featured Count Dracula, played by Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney Jr. as Larry Talbot, or the Wolfman, who had become partners with Dr. Sandra Mornay. She was played by Lenore Aubrey. No fucking idea who that was. In order to find a brain to reactivate Frankenstein's monster, this time played by a man by the name of Glenn Strange in 1948. In these films, the monsters from the studio's earlier films team up against various characters. There was a lot of crossovers and sequels made, such as Abbott and Costello Meeting the Monster, and ending with Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy, by the way, which had none of the original actors. Well, that's because they had some fucking sense. The only new monster movie produced in the 1950s was The Creature from the Black Lagoon, a pesky amphibious humanoid in the waters of the Amazon. The creature, also known as the Gill Man, played by Ben Chapman on land and Rico Browning underwater. And The Mummy, starring Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. Several products based on the characters from the Universal film series were released, ranging from plastic model kits, Halloween masks. By the way, Gen X, you remember them fucking Halloween masks. They had the fucking little rubber band, and it was such a shitty rubber band held on by a fucking staple onto this plastic mask that, honestly, you couldn't see shit out of. I'm sure it probably had the lead paint on it, and or, you know, the costume was made out of asbestos so we didn't catch on fire, thinking of our safety, you know, that type of stuff. They also had figurines, plush dolls, toys, drinking glasses. You know, and whatever happened to that? Whatever happened to going to McDonald's and getting a set of the, I don't know, Rocky and Bullwinkle glasses, or Dudley Do-Right, or the Frankenstein and the other Universal Monster glasses? That just fucking sucks that that shit doesn't exist anymore. Man, I really wish our kids and grandkids could experience that type of stuff. Anyway, back to the subject at hand. While some of these objects bear similarity to the actors who portray them, others are more generic interpretations. Other mediums included the Universal Monsters in tandem, such as Bobby, quote, Boris Pickett's popular song, The Monster Mash, and the TV series such as The Munsters, which based all of its characters on Universal likenesses. The 1990s saw a trend in the merchandising of Universal Monsters material, such as a part of a trend for the decade of recycling and reinventing old material from the past. This led to the release of The Mummy and Monster Rally-styled films such as Van Helsing in 2004. With most of the memorable, iconic monsters of everything that had been published from 1931 with Dracula and Frankenstein, and 32 with The Mummy, 33 with The Invisible Man, so on and so forth, these iconic monsters are still so recognizable, even 93 years later. Dracula, Frankenstein, The Bride of Frankenstein, The Invisible Man, The Mummy, The Wolfman, and The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Tell me you don't already know those. When I say those names, there's a picture that comes into your mind. And typically, it's going to be the Universal ones. We come back from this break, we're going to talk about cryptoids. So, anyway, stick around after these words from my fake sponsors.
What does Heine Lick Beer and the handlebar mustache have in common? They may not be right for every occasion, unless you find yourself drafted into an old-timey bare-knuckle boxing match. There are some things that are best saved for the right occasion, but then they make those occasions even righter. Heine Lick Beer and Heine Lick Light may not be appropriate for all occasions, but when the right one happens, be prepared. And just like under every handlebar mustache, there's a little Heine Lick. Heine Lick. Expand your horizons. Who knows? You might just like it.
You may be able to get it your way at BK, or you may be loving it at those Golden Arches. But now introducing the place that will have you coming over and over. Hi, I'm Harry Fur. Me and my brother Bear saw there was a gap in the burger market that needed filling, and that's why we opened Fur Burgers. We have the widest menu selection of any burger joint. You can get a hairy fur burger or a bear fur burger, whatever your preference is. But we also offer seafood with our famous bearded clams. You want a taco instead? We have the best fish tacos around. Maybe it's chicken you want. We have large breasts or thick thighs. And everything at Fur Burgers comes with a shake. And no drive-through service, because we want you to take your time so everyone is satisfied. Come taste the difference Fur Burgers has to offer.
Any claims of time travel are purely fictitious and are only meant for entertainment purposes. And honestly, if you believe Rob can travel through time, I only have one question for you. What the hell is wrong with you?
Okay, welcome back from that break. According to Webster's, cryptoids, it's an animal such as Sasquatch or the Loch Ness Monster that has been claimed to exist, but never proven to exist. These are nowhere near the entire list of cryptoids, but a few of the more popular. In South Jersey and Philadelphia folklore in the United States, the Jersey Devil, also known as the Leeds Devil, is a legendary creature said to inhabit the forests of the Pine Barrens in South Jersey. The creature is often described as a flying biped with hooves, but there are many variations. The common description is that of a bipedal kangaroo-like or wyvern-like creature with a horse or goat-like head, leathery bat-like wings, horns, small arms with clawed hands, legs with cloven hooves, and a forked or pointed tail. It is also said that it has a strange elongated body and a thick tail. It has been reported to move quickly and is often described as emitting a high-pitched, blood-curdling scream. Next is the Loch Ness Monster, affectionately known as Nessie, a mythical creature in Scottish folklore that is said to inhabit Loch Ness in the Scottish Highlands. It is often described as large, long-necked, and with one or more humps protruding from the water. Popular interest and belief in the creature has varied since it was brought to worldwide attention in 1933. Evidence of its existence is anecdotal, with a number of disputed photographs and sonar readings. The scientific community explains alleged sightings of the Loch Ness Monster as hoaxes, wishful thinking, and the misidentification of mundane objects. The pseudoscience and subculture of cryptozoology has placed particular emphasis on the creature. Then, in Ohio folklore, the Loveland Frog is a legendary humanoid frog described as standing roughly 4 feet tall, allegedly spotted in Loveland, Ohio. In 1972, the Loveland Frog legend gained renewed attention when a Loveland police officer reported to a colleague that he had seen an animal consistent with descriptions of the Frogman. On March 3, 1972, at 1 a.m., Loveland police officer Ray Shockey was driving on Riverside Drive near the Totes Boot Factory and the Little Miami River when an unidentified animal scurried across the road in front of his vehicle. The animal was fully illuminated in his vehicle's headlights, and he described it as 3 to 4 feet long and about 50 to 75 pounds, with leathery skin. He reported spotting the animal crouched like a frog before it momentarily stood erect to climb over the guardrail and back down towards the river. Another is Mothman, in West Virginian folklore, is a humanoid creature reportedly seen in the Point Pleasant area from November 15, 1966 to December 15, 1967. On November 15, 1966, two young couples from Point Pleasant, Roger and Linda Scarberry, and Steve and Mary Millette, they had seen a large black creature whose eyes glowed red, standing at the side of the road near the TNT area, the site of a former World War II munitions plant. Linda Scarberry described it as a slender, muscular man about 7 feet tall with white wings. However, she was unable to discern its face due to the hypnotic effect of its eyes. Distressed, the witnesses sped away, reporting that the creature flew after their car, making a screeching sound. It pursued them as far as Point Pleasant city limits. Many Mothman reports and much older folk tales suggesting that something real may have triggered the scares and became woven with existing folklore. He also records anecdotal tales of Mothman supposedly attacking the roofs of parked cars occupied by teenagers. Some pseudoscience adherents, such as ufologists, paranormal authors, and cryptozoologists, suggest the Mothman could be an alien, a supernatural manifestation, or a previously unknown species of animal. Now for the two big ones, first the chupacabra, or literally goat sucker, from Spanish chupa, meaning sucks, and cabras, meaning goats, is a legendary creature in the folklore of parts of the Americas. Physical descriptions of the creature vary. In Puerto Rico and in Hispanic America, it is generally described as a heavy creature, reptilian and alien-like, roughly the size of a small bear, and with a row of spines reaching from the neck to the base of the tail, while in the southwestern United States it is depicted as more dog-like. Initial sightings and accompanying descriptions first occurred in Puerto Rico in 1995. Since then, the creature has since been reported as far north as Maine, as far south as Chile, all across the continental United States, and even outside the Americas in countries like Russia and Philippines. A remarkable photographic image has been snapped on the morning of June 13, 2006, in a woman's backyard in the state of Nebraska. KETV7 in Omaha broadcast the picture on June 14th, and it appears to be an animal unlike any most people have seen locally. The news staff report that Mary Ann Carta from Omaha took some pictures of the animal that she saw. She said it could be a bobcat, but it has her scared about taking her morning walk or allowing her grandchildren to play outside. I was not afraid at the moment. I was in the house, but I was just thinking about yesterday with the grandkids. It was like, what would I have done? Carta said. An expert at the Henry Dorley Zoo is examining the pictures. He thinks it could be a feral cat. What are we to make of the hint of striping on the back, the long canid-like legs, and long thin tail? A werewolf, perhaps? In June of 2019, many on Twitter now claim another chupacabra turned up at Ponca State Park in Nebraska. The proof, some insist, is a pair of photos tweeted by the Sportsman Channel showing half of a furry creature with a vicious-looking set of teeth and canine similarities. The image features a creepy skeletal animal with little hair and a long tail, like a monkey. Its head was hidden by bushes. Animal Planet describes as a mix of vampire and marauding furry lizard, first reported in Chile. Knowledge of the dog-like beast has spread in the United States via the nation's growing South and Central American immigrant population. No one has ever caught a chupacabra, though plenty of eyewitnesses claim to have seen one. The Lincoln Journal Star reports a woman says she found it near her home in Martinsburg, which is 11 miles southwest of Ponca State Park. Kettleson says her dog dragged the carcass to her home. The post, which got nearly 4,000 reactions, concluded by asking jokesters not to respond. There may be other animals out there like this. I am serious, said the post. Those taking the matter seriously have suggested it was a dog, mountain lion, fox, or blonde raccoon. And probably the most famous or even infamous cryptoid out there. He has been seen literally everywhere, the one, the only Bigfoot, also commonly referred to as Sasquatch, a large and hairy human-like mythical creature alleged by some to inhabit forests in North America. Enthusiasts of the subject, such as those within the pseudoscience of cryptozoology, have offered various forms of dubious evidence to prove Bigfoot's existence, including anecdotal claims of sightings, as well as alleged photographs, video and audio recordings, hair samples, and casts of large footprints, which probably the most famous and recognizable is the Patterson-Gimlin film shot in 1967, and has since been subjected to many attempts to authenticate or debunk it. Patterson died of cancer in 1972 and maintained right to the end that the creature on the film was real. Gimlin has always denied being involved in any part of a hoax with Patterson. Gimlin mostly avoided publicly discussing the subject from at least the early 1970s until about 2005. However, the scientific consensus is that Bigfoot and alleged evidence is a combination of folklore, misidentification, and hoax rather than a living animal. Folklorists trace the phenomenon of Bigfoot to a combination of factors and sources, including the European wild man figure, folk tales, and indigenous cultures. Examples of similar folk tales of wild, hair-covered humanoids exist throughout the world, such as the skunk ape of the southeastern United States, the Almas, Yeren, and Yeti in Asia, the Australian Yowie, and creatures in the mythologies of indigenous people. Bigfoot is often described as a large, muscular, and bipedal human or ape-like creature covered in black, dark brown, or dark reddish hair. And honestly, most all sketches I have seen Jack Link's rendition is pretty close in description. In 1971, multiple people in the Dalles, Oregon, filed a police report describing an overgrown ape, and one of the men claimed to have sighted the creature in the scope of his rifle, but could not bring himself to shoot it because it looked more human than animal. Common descriptions include broad shoulders, no visible neck, and long arms, which many skeptics attribute to misidentification of a bear standing upright. Some alleged nighttime sightings have stated the creature's eyes glowed yellow or red. However, eyeshine is not present in humans or any other known great apes, and so proposed explanations for observable eyeshine off of the ground in the forest include owls, raccoons, or opossums perched in foliage. Michael Rugg, the owner of the Bigfoot Discovery Museum, claims to have smelled Bigfoot, stating, "Imagine a skunk that had rolled around in dead animals and had hung around the garbage pits. The enormous footprints for which the creature is named are claimed to be as large as 24 inches long and 8 inches wide. Some footprint casts have also contained claw marks, making it likely that they came from known animals such as bears, which have 5 toes and claws." And what you have all been waiting for, the Nebraska sightings. Late fall afternoon sighting by motorist near Blue Springs in 1974. While traveling southbound on Highway 77, another was a teen had a nighttime sighting near Fontenelle Forest in 1975 in Bellevue, Nebraska, near Offutt Air Force Base. Then there were multiple witness sighting at night, 3 miles east of Meade, Nebraska, in the summer of 1979 on the south side of Highway 92. A hunter has evening sighting near Bazile Creek State Wildlife Management Area in the fall of 1979 along the Missouri River. Various sightings by residents near the Missouri River in the summer of 2002 near Omaha. Another interesting article I found was, in August 1976, a woman sitting outside a farmhouse in southeastern Nebraska noticed a sudden eerie silence among the animals. 300 yards away, silhouetted against the sky, stood a huge hairy figure. It moved rapidly through the pasture towards her, panicking the dogs. It broke down the wire fence and was only 30 feet from her when it vanished before her eyes. It nevertheless left hair samples on the fence, but the state's Game and Parks Commission refused to look at them. Check that shit out. What do you think? I personally believe but have never seen one, although I would love to. But sometimes when I'm out fishing, I can feel something watching me. A deer? A mountain lion? A game warden? Or possibly a Bigfoot? Thanks for joining me. Next week, The Weird and Unexplained continues with my look at paranormal creatures. So until then, be careful.
This has been Generation Extraordinary. The views and opinions are Rob's and Rob's alone. Any claims of time travel are purely fictional. The music and audio clips are not Rob's or GXO's, and in most cases were downloaded through his paid YouTube subscription and are only used for entertainment purposes. GXO is a production of Popeye Enterprises. Its host, creator, producer, and editor is Robert Pop, Co-producer is Harley Quinn. If you are a fan of the show, please show your support by going on to Spotify and follow us, like and share. It seems like such a small thing to do, but it really does help. For more information, support, suggestions, or to contact us, go to the website www.genxord.com. Thanks for listening.